I begin by introducing the New Orleans School of Screening. I would like to make a few corrections in one of the slides. I think it slipped through. As Megan was saying, we do the screening in New Orleans through the school-based health centers, and it's not my screening. I should correct that. It is actually my screening. It has gone through school-based health clinic for the first 3 years, but we moved into including all schools that we could go to. As we can see on this slide, it started in 1995-96 as a demonstration project. We went to three schools, and even if these schools had school-based health centers, the screening itself did not take place into the school health centers. We worked with those schools, as we just discussed throughout this morning, to come up with the best way you could do that, even though the schools had school health clinics. Now, over the years, we demonstrated the need and the success of conducting this program for the first 2 years in returning in the same three schools. And sure enough, we detected infections there, as we can see on this slide in the next two that we follow. Then we expanded the program to include schools that did not have school-based health centers. It included eight schools in 1997-98. And since then, after we have shown that we can do that in schools without school health centers, we try to expand that to as many as 13 schools in 1999-2000. And each year, as we can see, we have detected infections in those schools. We have screened as many as 6,080 students in 1999-2000. And we have detected as many as close to 600 infections in one school year, and 120 gonorrhea infections in a single school year. And here is the prevalence for chlamydia. As we, as I said, the prevalence has gone from nearly below 5% in 1996-97. To 9.4% in 2000-2001 for males, that is blue bars. And among females, this has gone from 10% in 1996-97 in pink to 16.5% in 2003-2004. And the gonorrhea is much lower. It has gone from 1% to 2% among male, and from 2% to approximately 5% among females. In 1995-96, we didn't do the gonorrhea screening. We introduced gonorrhea screening during the second year of the program. We have shown that the screening could be done. The gonorrhea screening was added into the program. Okay, if there is any other detail that is related to the chlamydia screening, we can return there later. Let me switch now to discuss treatment and follow-up in all of these programs we have heard about this morning. And to introduce that, treatment follow-up of individual screen for health condition is a key component of any screening program, not only chlamydia screening, but any screening program. There's no justification for screening if treatment and follow-up cannot be provided. And a treating student who tests positive for chlamydia or gonorrhea in school is considerably more efficient, because students, they are already reporting in school every day, so we assume that they are there, it's easy to get them for treatment. But there is no single best approach to locating and notifying infected students or notifying them of the test results, and to schedule treatment in schools, as we will see. What may work in one school may not work or may not be accepted in another school, and even within the same school district. And the processes for treatment are often negotiated on a school-by-school basis, and not only for the treatment and screening, but for all aspects of conducting the screening in school, flexibility remains the key. You go, you can make suggestions, this is what we want to do, and you can share with them a success story in how we have done that in the past, or some others have done that. But then you start listening to them. How can we do that in this school so that it can work? Now, after students have been notified of the test result, as Megan discussed here, in a confidential way, all program offer in-school single-dose observed therapy. In other words, the screening is done in school, and we make sure that also treatment will be provided in school. That's what it just means. And so we try to locate all students in school and offer treatment in school. And we usually return to each school on multiple days to locate students who need treatment. And treatment sessions include STD counseling. Now, the in-school treatment is, this is just an illustration on where treatment takes place. In Baltimore, all students are screened in school-based health centers. This is also where they are providing treatment. Now, for all other programs, this table is just an illustration of how flexible we need to be. And so treatment can be given in nurses' office, mostly in nurses' office in all schools, but in other locations as well that can be found within the school. That may include the Indian Health Service in the Indian Health Service, it can include an Indian Health Service clinic. And we can have, for example, an office within the school-based health center. We have done that in New Orleans and in New York City. And the school-based health center also provides treatment if the school has the school-based health center. And that is done in New Orleans and in New York City. And any other available private space can also be used to provide treatment. As far as we can ensure that treatment will be provided confidentially. And Philadelphia can have used counselor's office and the nurse's office. And again, we work with the school where treatment can be provided. Now after, again, we assume here students have been notified of the test results, and we all program collaborate with local health services and department to treat students who are not located in school. Those who refuse in-school treatment or prefer to be treated by the private physicians. So here, students have been notified and we cannot find them in school. We need to collaborate how we can find them and have them treated. And in Indian Health Service, for example, there's coordination between the tribe, the Indian Health Service, and the local health department to ensure that no one falls through cracks. In New Orleans, the medical director of the STD clinic is also the medical director of the school-based health the school screening program that facilitates coordination of treating students who cannot be offered treatment in school. And in New York City and in Philadelphia, there's a policy for expediting high school student treatment in STD clinics. So if those students are reported to the STD clinic, there's process in place that we ensure that they will be seen in expedited manner. And overall, CDSTD clinics and DIS are of great assistance to school-based STD screening program, as we will see later in this presentation. Now, how do we provide patient follow-up? Two students now, they have received the result and they are treated in school. Here is a student that we see and they are being provided treatment. In Baltimore, all students are instructed to return to the school-based health center for retesting after 3 months when they come for treatment. In New Orleans and New York City, all students treated are referred to the STD clinic to seek additional STD evaluation, including HIV testing. In New Orleans, they are not offered in-school retesting at 3 months, but all of them are encouraged to be retested every year as we return there each year. Everyone is encouraged to participate regardless of previous participation or previous test results. And in New York City, as they are being treated, they are offered retesting 3 to 4 months after treatment in school that has school-based health centers. So in here, the school-based health center actually will see that students are offered this testing three to four months after treatment. In Philadelphia, they may be offered in school treatment after 3 months, 3 to 4 months, when staffing and school schedule permits. And in the Indian Health Service, as we said, coordination remains the key to make sure that everyone is followed up and treatment is being offered. And in New Orleans, in New York City, in Philadelphia, students who are not located and treated in school are referred to the DIS for field follow-up. Now, for partner notification and follow-up, students who are treated in school in New Orleans, in New York City, and in Philadelphia are interviewed to elicit partner information. And partner who attend school and who can be located in school, they are in New York City, they are tested for CT and GC and offered treatment. Now in New Orleans, in New York City, in Philadelphia, they are just offered treatment. And they are then referred to the CDSTD clinic as the index infected student is for further STD evaluation that include HIV testing. Now the partner who are not in school and who are not located in school in New York City are being contacted by phone if possible, and if not located by phone, in-person visits are made to the school home. And once they're located, partners are given information about their exposure to the STD, and they are given information to go to the clinic for treatment. In New Orleans and in Philadelphia, partners who are not located in school actually are being followed using the information that is elicited by the index infected students. And that information is given to the DIS, who will initiate notification of exposure and follow-up to the CDSTD clinic. And at the CDSTD clinic, the partner undergo routine STD evaluation and management. This is in New Orleans. And they are seen as the index infected student in Philadelphia in an expedited visit. Now, here we have some data that were compiled in Philadelphia to give us an idea of where students who participate in screening program are offered treatment. As we can see in blue, most of them are being offered treatment in school. Close to 70% of them are screened, are offered treatment in school. But as we said, school almost always will not ensure that 100% of infected students are treated in school. So this is where all the CD clinics and health department comes in. And as we see in here, the health center have treated most of the students that were not treated in school. And private physicians are also offering treatment. And this slide also shows that some students may all, despite all the effort, we may still end up not treating some few of those students. And this is another illustration of how treatment data in the New Orleans program. This gives us an indication of time before treatment, from the time students are screened to the time they are offered treatment. This is on the second column. These are the total students who have been treated among those with a documented date of treatment. Now, on average, we have compiled 4 years of data here, but if you look at the total at bottom, on average, there's 22 days between the day screening is provided and the day that treatment is provided. And half of the students are treated after 17 days, as illustrated by the median, 17 at the bottom. So the median length of time between treatment is 17 days, meaning that half of the students with documented date of treatment are treated after 17 days. And we have, after 30 days after screening, we have approximately 84% of students have been treated. Now, for example, in New Orleans, we can spend 4 to 5 weeks in school still doing the screening. During that time, treatment is being also provided. And by the time we have completed the screening in one school, approximately 84 or 85% of the students have already been treated. Now, if we put this data together with the data that we previously saw in Philadelphia, where approximately 70% of students are treated in school and the rest of them are treated in other places, it means that much of the effort that we put forth to treat students is to track the last few, because most of them, we treat them when they are in school. And this is only data with student with documented date of treatment. If we include here those who have not been treated, the effort is put forth to try to get them, and then at the end, we didn't get them. So we spend more time and energy and effort trying to track down a few students to make sure that everyone is treated. In conclusion, school-based STD screening program generally achieve high treatment rates in spite of the challenges to bringing everyone screened to treatment. And treatment usually requires strong collaboration, as we have seen throughout this symposium, with local health services, tremendous amount of time and personnel. And in inner city schools, treatment is frequently delayed by high absentee and truancy rates. And protocol to ensure high partner notification and treatment have been difficult. Now, if we have been having a hard time treating students themselves, partner is even more difficult, because mostly we rely on infected students giving us information for the partner. Some of the time, we don't get, most of the time, we don't get valuable information to get partners. And as a result, we think that these partly contribute to the high rate of reinfection among students, as Charlotte showed earlier here, and, with over 20% reinfection rate among students who have been treated successfully in school. Now, all taken together, this program demonstrates that schools provide unique opportunities to control sexually transmitted diseases among adolescents. Even if we have heard that New Orleans, we are not screening this year, but we have calls for schools, school nurses, school counselors, principals to come into to the school to offer screening. All we don't have is the funding to just go and do that. We have the will, we have the resources, we have the need, but we lack resources. And I would like to thank all the members of this panel, Lenore, Lori, Charlotte, Megan, for putting all of this symposium together. And special thanks to Greta Anschutz for putting the Philadelphia treatment data together. Thank you very much.
Time for questions, and I will hope that everybody's sitting in the front row, so we'll call people up as necessary. I'll start in the front.
About 70% of the this is for the recording.
The question is the screening in Baltimore voluntary, and what proportion of students get that screen? About 70%, 80% of the students join school-based health centers for their treatment, which can be for any healthcare-related activity. We know that in Baltimore, 50% of ninth graders are sexually active. And as far as I know from the nurses, anyone who admits being sexually active gets screened. So I think that they're pretty much all getting the screen. They say we're going to screen you unless you don't want to be. And I'm told by the nurse practitioners that virtually no one refuses. So I think everyone that comes into the school-based clinic, and many of the girls come for reproductive health care. So they're there for their prescription every 3 months and are getting continually screened and re-screened. That's why our raw data, which has all of the negative re-screens after they've been tested positive and screened, different from the unduplicated patient data. Now, we know that then every year, as students become more sexually active, that by the time they get to 12th grade in Baltimore, about 80-90% are sexually active. So the sexual activity percentage increases. So it looks like it's apparent to me that if they're using the school-based health center, they're getting treated if they're sexually active. Anybody else have any questions about Baltimore while I'm here in Tevin?
Correct. They do. We run a rate of about 4-2%. It's been coming down over the last 2 years. But most of the nucleic acid amplification tests for both chlamydia and gonorrhea. So we automatically test for both. Very minimal for some tests. Other tests, there's no cost difference. And Baltimore traditionally has been a high gonorrhea prevalence area, so we've always tested for both those organisms and do some select testing for trichomonas. Do we track what? I don't. The school nurse practitioners may. They all take the GAP survey when they come into ninth grade for risk assessment. It's my personal, feeling that most of them, at least most of the women, are coming for reproductive health care services. But I don't track them. Right. Yeah. I think the first question out of the nurse practitioner's mouth when they come in, for whatever reason, even a sore throat or a hurt finger or a broken toe, is or stomach pain, is are you sexually active? They're very focused on asking that as the first question. So I don't think we miss many for not, you know. So it doesn't matter why they come in, but we don't try. We have tried working with colleges in our area, and they are very unreceptive to working with them. Funds? If it's hard to get into a high school, it's even more difficult to get into colleges. They have their own clinics, and they do their own testing for students that come in. They either send them to Quest or to the state health lab, so they don't feel any need to do any college-wide screening. So they all have their own health departments and screening. Are they justified? I'm sorry, I don't have an opinion on that. when they admit to being sexually active, they get screened for chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, and for HIV automatically in Baltimore.
Are there questions from any of the other programs? Yeah.
Other programs?
Right, that's a good question, just to repeat it for the recording. The question was just, for passive consent procedures, if the school is conducting the consenting, how do you ensure confidentiality of the students so they're not singled out as not participating? What we do in New York City is we do leave it up to the school to prohibit that student from participating from the entire program. And that kind of, for that very reason, because it came up as a question, first of all, we don't know who the students are. Our STD staff doesn't know who the individual is, so we wouldn't know which students to keep out of the program, so leave that to the school. We toyed with the idea at first of having them participate in the education, but then not be offered the testing. But with the way that our program is structured, they're all in the same room together, and so it would be very obvious and potentially stigmatizing to not give a few people a brown paper bag because they're not allowed to test. So what we ask is just for the school to keep that person out of the program altogether when they go to the study hall that period or something. Correct. Did you have another question? Any other New York City questions? The question was just why is the program in New York City specifically for public schools? I mean, one thing is that, you know, the program was initially funded for public schools through our private grant, so that was sort of a grant stipulation. And we just got expansion funding last year. So we're in the process of expanding to a greater number of schools. We're sticking, you know, first to the public schools because those tend to be the students at greatest risk in the most high need, high morbidity areas. But we have had some preliminary discussions with the heads of the alternative high schools in New York City, special needs high schools, and we're certainly open as we expand to increasing to other private schools. It's kind of a whole other can of worms to start doing that because then you have to engage each private school on an individual basis since they have, you know, complete jurisdiction of their school. But that's something we're open to and we'll hopefully be doing in the years to come. In terms of workload, volume? Absolutely. The question was interviewing for the purpose of partner elicitation and partner notification to get partners in for treatment. We initially decided this is not something that on a standard basis we do in New York City for chlamydia or gonorrhea because we have almost 50,000 cases of chlamydia in New York City last year, and there's no way that our STD program staff could interview all of those cases for partners. But we decided to focus on it with the school project specifically because it's a high-need population and because we knew that rates of reinfection are the highest among this particular age group. So it does take a lot of work, and that's why we have a number of program staff that go back to do treatment and follow up. Our program manager does a lot of the attempts to contact the partners if the partners are not located in the school, either by phone or in person. And if we can't locate them on a few phone attempts, we basically cut those people to our field or DIS staff to continue following up on them. And it's a priority that we decided to make for our STD program
as a whole based upon that population.
But you're right, it is a definitely a huge amount of work.
Who does it? Either myself or some of the public health advisor DIS staff that we have. Yeah. So far, we haven't had really, I would say, stellar outcomes in this area. And I think that part of the reason for that is a lot of students, I mean, frankly, some of them aren't able to remember the name, maybe if not the name, though certainly the locating information and contact information of their partners. Kind of sad, but true. And so we've had, I would say we get at least, it's kind of off the top of my head, but somewhere around 75% of the index patients we get locating contact information for their partners, and then we get about 30% of the partners. Or do you want to move on?
I will just address that as well. We also do partner notification in Philadelphia, and actually Greta Anschutz had a poster on it downstairs, so you can take a look at the percentage of partners who are not only elicited but notified. So hopefully that'll be helpful to you. Any other questions for any of the other programs? You had to put, oh, okay. That's okay. While you're thinking. Right, they're just doing legislation now in New York, right? So there's no legislation, and our attorneys in Pennsylvania, although it says that it's legal in Pennsylvania, we are still also working on getting a legal opinion locally for partner-delivered therapy. So at this point, we do not do any partner-delivered therapy.
I will tell you, the students are asking for it.
Yeah, it happens all the time. I do a lot of the treatments myself, and students ask for that all the time. I did want to take a minute to plug, and Laura, you're going to have to give me the name of the document. There is a great document that Indian Health Services put together for getting in and dealing with getting into schools, and I recommend reading it for anybody who's interested in starting a school-based health or school-based screening program.
I just want to say we stole that document from ETR, so the ETR has a really good website on starting school-based screening. And it's available on their website. I think you have the ETR education and testing resources. They have a booth downstairs, actually. They do a lot of educational materials. They do brochures. They do curricula. And I think this curriculum you actually have to purchase, this guideline. I think it's like $6 a copy. But we had talked to ETR, and we had looked at the guidelines and said, does this work for us in Indian country? And we pulled together a work group to review the guidelines and decided that our situation is unique enough that we really wanted to tailor some guidelines. So we tailored those. We took ETR's guidelines and tailored them for Indian country. So if you're not working in Indian country, I mean, you're welcome to look at ours. They're for free. Actually, this is good. They're for free on our website. And they're based on ETR's, which you can pay for. So, but if you want a more generalizable guidelines that don't focus on Indian country, then you can look at ETR's guidelines. But ours are on our website, which is, I think it was on one of the slides. It was www.ihs.gov. /medical programs/ not very friendly address.
And in the court, you had a question for that to respond.
Yeah, I can answer that question, actually. That data was, the way we do it in Philadelphia and similar in New York is that after we try to do treatment in schools and we go out to the schools, we do DIS notification, and we actually do treatment confirmation. So we have staff who, if the patient says they were treated in the private doctor's office, calls and confirms that the patient was treated in the private doctor's office. We never take a student's word for it. So we believe nobody, and that's how that data was put together. We get the information directly from them. Not me, but we have fabulous staff who calls.
question was, we increased treatment for the last one of the year compared to other years. And what did we do to increase that? That was, am I correctly first question? Yeah. Treatment actually is a combination of several factors. So it might be just we just got enough time and enough resources to do that. There's no single reason to explain that. The same effort is put forth every year to achieve the same level, but then the result will vary with so many factors.